Hello and welcome to Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions, where every episode we discuss some scientific misconceptions with the hope that you learn something you didn't already know about the world. I'm here with my co-host Margaret, to the moon and back again, Hanslick Burton.
And joining me is my co-host Camden Jimmy Stewart, Hanslick Burton.
Welcome to the show! Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 28.
It's just the two of us this time. There's no third co-host.
So we hope that you can...
We hope we're enough for you.
...co-manage your excitement. That's Office reference.
It won't be the last.
It will never be the last until my last breath.
Wow.
Dark. Anyway, speaking of dark things, what are we excited about this week?
Go ahead, Kevin. Tell us about it.
This week I am excited. Let me be clear. There's been a lot of news recently about the coronavirus.
So excited about the coronavirus.
So excited. Not, I don't know if I'm excited about it, but it's that thing. I looked into it. I went onto the CDC's website, which is always a great website for tracking in, influenza, I was going to say, and like just diseases. Mm-hmm. There are 293 active cases looking into whether someone might have the coronavirus. So it doesn't mean they have it. It's just there are 293 cases of people in the United States and looking into whether they have it.
And you're excited by the possibility
that. I'm excited by a chance to remind everybody that the CDC also would like you to know through me that there are 19 to 26 million cases of the flu, 180,000 hospital visits this year, this season alone of the flu season, which is not done yet. So those were hospital visits.
Wow.
And 10 to 25,000 people in the United States have died due to the flu.
And complications, I'd imagine.
Complications due to the flu. So I just want to say that while the coronavirus is something to think about and always to develop good hygiene around, I think tomorrow if the world told us that there is a vaccine against the coronavirus, I think the world would be like, hooray, let's go get it. Guess what? There is currently a vaccine to something that is killing
more people.
Way more people in the United States alone. Mm-hmm. And there's a vaccine for it already, and it's never too late to get the vaccine.
That's a really good message, though.
Anyway,
it was whispered very passionately, but it is a good message that, like, yeah, we're freaking out about the coronavirus as we should, mm-hmm. but
I don't know if we should be freaking out.
Well, we should show a proper amount of concern.
Exactly. I'm worried there's a fair amount of xenophobia also wrapped up into the coronavirus.
Absolutely, there is some xenophobia. Oh, absolutely.
There's always xenophobia, probably.
Yeah.
Anyway, getting dark again. Get your flipping flu shot.
Well, my excitement is also about fitness. Oh, there's a little motorcycle farting its way by. That's what it sounded like. Anyway.
Never mind. I'm just going to say if something sounds like that, you should go to a doctor.
Sure. But mine is also, my thing that I'm excited about is also about health. And I've got to thank Janet, my friend Janet, for this. And it's ClassPass. So ClassPass is this app, this company that partners with different like fitness places around your area, around the United States. And it allows you to go to different places to work out and do different workout classes without having to commit to like one gym. Mm-hmm. So for example, in the past month, I have gone to a couple spin classes or cycling classes. I've gone to a couple bar classes. I've gone to, what else have I done? Some like high intensity training classes.
Interval training, yeah.
Interval training. And you can mix it up. So I really, really like it. I will admit I don't like working out. I'm not a person who's like, hooray, this is fun. But the variety makes it interesting to me. So I've been really enjoying ClassPass. And I think, and we're not sponsored by them, but I think you can get a month for free. At least you can get a certain amount of time for free to test it out.
It had been a month in January. So they might be extending it.
Yeah.
I saw recently that it was like last chance to get your month free. So maybe it's still going on.
Yeah. So anyway, ClassPass, really cool. Really fun.
Cool.
So let's head into the main segment of the show, of course, which is the misconceptions. So every week we each bring a new scientific misconception that we share, we explain it, and we discuss it. As a note, as our longtime listeners know, we don't tell each other what we are going to be talking about so that the other person can learn along with you all.
And in fact, this is a particularly dangerous episode because as we have let slip before, Margaret and I will often give each other a one-word clue.
To make sure we're not doing the same one.
Mm-hmm. And Margaret, why is this episode different?
Because we didn't do that.
We did not. So on air, live, in front of no studio audience, one of us will go first, and hopefully the other one doesn't go, uh-oh.
So I'm going to keep it simple in terms of what we're flipping today. I'm going to do a random number generator, Camden.
Ooh.
Online. And
although someone argues it's not technically random.
Okay. I'm going to put minimum one, maximum two. Would you like one or two, Camden? And the winner goes first.
It is February, so two.
Okay, I'm going to go one. Well, it was you. I feel like I never get to go first.
That is because I have rigged the entire system.
Wow, even Google.
Episode 43 is the first time you get to go first.
Dang.
Mark it down.
All right, so start us off.
All right, Margaret, you ready for some jokes?
Oh, the oven's ready. Yes.
Here we go. This is from citationjokesforus.com. Why do toadstools grow so close together?
This is a joke?
Mm-hmm.
Because they're all gathered around a toad table.
They don't need mushroom.
Oh, wow.
Why are mushrooms the most virtuous of fungi?
Because, I don't know. It's going to be awful. Go ahead.
They have the best morels.
Oh, my God.
What do you call a bacteria that likes to party?
A fungi.
And that's why we have to have a talk.
I'm just going to say, based on, unless your misconception takes a wild turn, we are not doing the same one.
Okay. What is a fungus?
It is, I feel like it's like a protist.
What's a protist?
A protist is like algae. Algae's not quite exactly a plant, but it's very, very nearly a plant.
Very nearly.
And I think that fungi is kind of like that. Like it's kind of almost a plant, but not exactly a plant.
Would you say it is closer to a bacteria, a plant, or an animal?
A bacteria?
Okay.
I'm wrong.
Margaret, go ahead and name types of fungus you know.
Mushrooms.
Good.
Other kinds of mushrooms.
Oh, thought you were going to say the two other M ones.
They're both M's?
There are two other M ones I have four most common ones I was thinking of.
Okay, go ahead.
Mold.
Okay.
This is great teaching, everyone.
This is bad teaching.
Mildew. And yeast. Those are the four that I was thinking of. Mushrooms, molds, mildew, and yeast.
Mm.
We are going to talk today. What is a fungus? Is it a plant? Is it a bacteria? Is it an animal? Is it a protist? What is it?
We'll see. I bet.
So let's start with what do fungus do? Do we know anything that a fungus do?
I think you do.
Sure. So they have cell walls,
mm-hmm.
and they have chitin in their cell walls.
Uh-huh. And that's a type of protein.
It is. Inside, that makes up another thing that we're sort of familiar with.
Octopus beak.
Beaks? Hard things, like insect skeletons, are also made of chitin. Huh. And crab molts, or crab skeletons.
I don't really think about fungus being, like, hard like those things.
I'm going to guess, and this is not researched, this part isn't researched, a lot of this stuff is researched, is that chitin is not actually, like, as densely packed as it is in other something that's hard. Things.
Sure.
Has no chlorophyll, and it is a heterotroph.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
What is, now why do you say it's interesting
well, because,
for listeners at home?
Because plants, if we're talking true plants, are autotrophs.
Ah, can you tell us the difference between auto and heterotroph?
It would be my pleasure.
It would be my pleasure.
Oh, Marcel the Shell. That's what I'm always excited about.
Oh, that's a great, that's a bonus. What are you consuming this
week? Yeah. Oh, Marcel. If you haven't, Jenny Slate, Marcel the Shell, go look it up on YouTube. It'll make your whole ding dang day.
Right now. We'll wait.
Welcome back. So an autotroph is a organism that creates its own food, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't rely on nobody.
Ain't nobody telling it how to eat food,
well,
get food.
The sun kind of is.
Sure. Okay.
But they don't need to consume anything besides what they can make on their own, in their own little bodies.
Mm-hmm. And a heterotroph
can use that, because hetero, like, so they can.
So this is a great point, and this is what I always like to do.
They can generate their own food, but they also need other sources of food outside their own bodies.
So I always like to break down what, like, the root words mean.
Okay.
I always felt like that was, A, just, like, good for the English language to help understand, like, Latin roots, and also to remember what a word is. Mm-hmm. So auto means self.
Okay.
So auto, they make their own food themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Hetero means different.
Yeah.
So they actually have to eat different things. It's not themselves.
Okay.
So they can't make food themselves.
I was thinking omni. That's what I was thinking.
That does both. That
That's
is good.
What
omnivores.
I was thinking. Omni, not hetero. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
No, you're good.
This apologize.
Is, if think about you with a degree in biology, oh, has boy. This confusion. There are probably many people out there. So let's get into it. King Philip came over for ginger snaps.
Kids pick candy over fancy green salads.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about Carl Linnaeus.
Yeah. So we're talking about how life has been organized traditionally.
Mm-hmm.
I will be using that, King Philip, or
kids
whatever.
Pick candy over fancy green salads.
Yep. Kids is kingdom. Pick is phylum. Class, order, family, genus, species. We will talk a little bit about some of those. One that is an sort of outdated way of thinking about how life is organized, but is sort of helpful still, is that there's sort of one bigger one above that, or three bigger domains that come before all of
before
that.
Before kingdom?
Now, domains are sort of like an outdated way of organizing life.
Mm-hmm.
But one of those we talk about is bacteria. So let's start that, because the fungus joke was saying a bacteria at a party is a fungi. So our fungus, bacteria. Bacteria, what do we know about those guys?
They're generally little.
Very little.
We need some of them in our bodies to
we
help
do.
Process things. In fact, you talked about how we are largely comprised of bacteria.
Great callback. That was from an earlier episode. I actually learned that all animal life, and this was from Microbial Cell Factories, the journal, all animal life require bacteria as a source of survival, because they are generally have the only enzymes available to help us synthesize vitamin B12, which is necessary in order for, like, proper metabolism in our bodies. So I just thought that was very interesting. Like, all animals need bacteria, which
right.
I guess I kind of thought that was true, but wasn't, maybe couldn't have told you why. Bacteria are made of something called a prokaryotic cell.
Mm-hmm.
Pro means first. So we think of them as, get that name because we think of those as the first cells. And karyo means nucleus. As will be relevant in a second. bacteria cells just, their insides are just sort of like, everything's just sort of like all mixed together.
Floating around.
It's all just floating around there, jumbled together.
Mm-hmm. Like a Jell-O salad.
Like a Jell-O salad. And these are single-celled organisms.
Mm-hmm.
So already, they're actually not fungus because fungus...
are multicellular.
Are multicellular, so we have to move on from bacteria. And so as we go on from bacteria to what we call the eukaryotes, as a side note, two bacteria that one engulfed the other mm-hmm. is generally how we believe that, or we actually have quite a mountain of evidence that this is how eukaryotic cells came to be. So eukaryotic, U means true.
And it's spelled EU.
EU, thank you. Mm-hmm. Eukaryotic means true nucleus, because karyo means nucleus.
Okay.
And we call it a true nucleus because all of their things inside them have a membrane. So it's like a, as my one of my favorite webcomics, XKCD, says, it is a bag of bags mm-hmm. of bags. So a cell is like a bag with little bags in it that mm-hmm. all have specific functions. That's how I think of eukaryotic cells. Whereas a prokaryotic is one bag, a eukaryotic cell is a bag of bags. check out XKCD thing explainer. That'll give you more information about that. So we have eukaryotic cells. The very first, I should say that bacteria evolved about 3.5 billion years ago, we believe. We get to the first major type of kingdom of eukaryotic cells, the plants, which evolved around 1.5 billion years ago.
Okay.
But our first eukaryotic cells evolved about 2.5 billion years ago.
It's a long time.
So it was a long time before we actually got to plants.
Mm-hmm.
What we do know about plants, are they one cell or more than one cell?
More than one cell. Sorry.
Yep. Pretty much all of them. Plants is also a weird word because the kingdom Plantae has what we think of as plants, which are like land plants. But there are also other plants mm-hmm. that are not what we traditionally think of as plants, but technically are plants.
Can you give an example?
I thought you were saying, can you say plants more? I can give you an example. You see them all the time in our waters.
Algae.
And in fact, algae, and not to spoil anyone's life here, for those who really like biology or have gone through biology, protists is sort of an outdated way of thinking of organisms.
Are you calling me outdated?
No, it's just, it's still a useful way to talk about how we group animals, or not animals, but organisms. Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot of, algae has always been this debate of, is it a protist? Is it a plant? It has chlorophyll.
Mm-hmm.
It's multicellular, or a lot of cells working together. A lot of people think, and it's autotroph, a lot of people are like, well, it's kind of a plant then. Like, I think we're
splitting hairs. Splitting roots.
But algae, mosses, stoneworts, other things like that still count as in the plant kingdom, mm-hmm. even if they're not land plants.
Sure.
But I said something important that you mentioned earlier. Plants, how do they get their energy?
They photosynthesize.
And so they are called a...
autotroph.
Uh-huh. And fungus don't get their energy from the sun. They are heterotrophs.
My God.
So in fact, fungus are not plants. So we got to keep going. So are the animals then? Animals evolved much more recently, only 800 million years ago.
Like compared, just like yesterday.
Just like it was, yes. It was a Tuesday. it was 1.5 billion years ago with plants, 800 million years ago or fungus. They are, in fact, very closely related to animals. And this is the misconception that is constantly considered because they are little. We typically think of them as a little plant thing because they live around plants when we think of like a mushroom. They are closely related to animals. Camden, why? I will give you some insight. Basically, the biggest thing is, A, we can like look at generally when things, how long they evolved. Mm-hmm. We can radio date them
mm-hmm.
using radioactive things. We also know that they generally have a common ancestor because they have a certain type of cell that has a flagella, which is like a little tail.
Cute.
Uh-huh. That they just have this certain type of cell that other plants don't.
Okay.
So plants just don't lack this kind of cell that all animals and fungus have. Fungus are also heterotrophs, mm-hmm. just like animals. Mm-hmm. So that's like a big thing there. And they don't have chlorophyll. So we don't think that, I mean, we know that they're not a plant because they don't have chlorophyll and they're heterotrophs. So those are big things that puts them close to animals. Of course, not completely being an animal. They don't move. They don't have a nervous system. They don't have special little like different types. They have little different types of cells, but not as much as animals do.
Right.
Some fun things about fungus, though.
Some fungi things.
About so they, fungus? I should just clarify then, kingdom, King Philip, or kids pick. Mm-hmm. There is the animal kingdom mm-hmm. that evolved more recently. The kingdom of fungus.
It's a whole kingdom mm-hmm. by itself? Okay, mm-hmm. that makes sense.
And then going back in time. So we have animals more recent, then mm-hmm. fungus, then plants, then bacteria, mm-hmm. then even an ancient bacteria we call archae bacteria, meaning okay. ancient. But fungus sit firmly on their own. They are their own thing. They are not a plant. They are not an animal, although they are more closely related to animals than plants. Some things that you can know about fungus that I got from the What is Life textbook. They have these little cells that are sort of like threads that you would think of as roots, that people would think look like roots. Mm-hmm. They will release enzymes to absorb nutrients from their surroundings. Mm. So they can do that through the soil, but they can also do that on rocks. So you'll also see like fungus growing on things like bread as like a mold mm-hmm. or a rock where it doesn't have roots, so to speak, you know. But they're releasing enzymes to digest and absorb nutrients from whatever they are on.
Okay.
They produce fruiting bodies when they reproduce, which is what a mushroom is. So yeah. most of that, when we see a mushroom, that's actually it reproducing.
It's not. Okay.
That's not like its body. That's just it, like it creating this little reproductive structure. They reproduce by dropping spores.
Spores.
Mm-hmm. And they often will form mutual relations with plants. So they are often closely connected to plants. So like if they live on a rock, they might be able to get the phosphorus out of a rock to give to a plant, while the plant might be able to give it sugars that it produces through photosynthesis.
That's so nice.
Yeah, that's very cute. So I'll finish here with some three fungus facts. Ready?
Yes, I think so.
Go ahead. Largest fungus in the world covers 4 square miles in area.
What?
And can be found in Northeast Oregon.
We're not that far from there.
It is called the humongous fungus. Clever. We are not that far from here. I would love to visit it. This fungus is what we call a saprophyte. So basically sapro means like it's digesting and living off dead trees. Well, mm-hmm. living trees, and then it kills them by like absorbing too many of the nutrients from it.
So it not dies. So
but they can
mutual.
Eat its dead tree body.
Wow.
And how they know that this thing is all one organism is because all around Oregon, when they find these dead trees, they would take DNA samples from it and find the fungus DNA was the exact same copy as one that were miles away from each other.
Wow.
That is a big old fungus. A humongous fungus.
Humongous fungus.
It is also thanks to it that we have the world's first discovered antibiotic, or at least the one that was most widely produced.
I know what it is, I bet.
Go for it.
Are you allergic to it?
I might be. It's been a while.
Penicillin.
Discovered by Alexander Fleming when he found that some bacteria weren't growing around this mold that had been growing on some old petri dishes that he left out. So what a discovery that has certainly helped the modern world fight a lot of different bacterias. And as I mentioned in episode 24, How to Change Your Mind, a book by Michael Pollan, talks about the psychedelic world mm-hmm. of mushrooms and fungus. So that's it. Fungus is on its own, not a plant.
So much like our friend David S. Pumpkins, fungus is its own thing.
Is its own thing. That is a great transition.
Thanks, Camden.
Yeah.
Well, I hope those joke writers feel really bad now.
Yeah, bacteria.
Yeah, fungi. All right, we're going to take a drastic turn and talk a little bit about something else. So I mentioned earlier that that last Office reference was not the only Office reference we're going to make. So I'm going to make another one here. So picture this. Kim and I are huge Office fans. We can quote it mostly by heart, which I'm going to test right now with Camden. So in The Office, Camden, on the boys and girls episode where they have like the boys go do one thing and the girls do another, Dwight is worried about all the women being in the same room. And he says, that's a terrible idea. And Jim says, what is? And Dwight responds, them all in there all together. If they stay in there too long, what does Dwight say?
He says, it's something like, if they stay in there too long, their periods will sync up.
They're going to get on the same cycle, wreak havoc on our plumbing. So today we're going to explore, is that true? Do people who get periods, who are living or spending time in close proximity, do they sync up?
What a great misconception.
Thank you. First of all, let's talk about who can get a period. Let's talk about it. It's not just people who identify as women or girls that can get a period. Transgender men and queer gender people who have uteruses, vaginas, fallopian tubes, and ovaries can also get periods. So I don't want to forget them, and I apologize in advance if I mention women. I mean people who get periods.
Gotcha.
And when when I refer to that, when I refer to like females and things, I'm mostly referring to studies that were done and how the language that they're using.
Great.
So just wanted to put that out there. So what is a period? What is it, Kim? And what happens?
Let me tell you.
Okay.
This is from my biology background.
Okay.
A period is the sloughing off.
Oh, what a phrase.
Here we go. Of the endometrium.
Sure.
Basically, like your uterus is creating this very like thick,
like wall.
That will provide nutrients to a little zygote, little fertilized egg.
Mm-hmm.
But then when no fertilized egg shows up, it's like, bye then.
And
I'll wait till next month.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically. So a period or menstruation, which is a word that I both love and hate. It's so obnoxious. It happens every month, approximately, when blood and tissue leave the uterus and come out of the vagina. So an egg is also released, and the period itself, like you were saying, Camden, is made up of the uterine lining that's being shed because that person isn't having a baby. I read somewhere, and I forget where it was, but somebody made the great analogy that a period is like, your uterus is like, I think this month we're going to have a baby. Wouldn't that be nice? When you like that? I'm going to put up the wallpaper. I'm going to get the nursery ready. And then you have to go and be like, actually, we're not having a baby this month. And the uterus is like, fine, I'm going to tear it all down. And that's a period.
I think I remember this. I think it was a webcomic where there's this little uterus just ripping the wallpaper down like in a
fine, fine then. So I want to cite my sources real quick. The Office is one of them. New York Times in their You Asked column, The Atlantic, Planned Parenthood, BBC News, a paper by Yang and Shank called Women Do Not Synchronize Their Menstrual Cycles, and Cleveland Clinic. So now that we've covered...
I think we have a peek into what might be the misconception.
Now that we've covered a little bit of the background, let's talk about the myth. So this idea of period syncing is also known as menstrual synchrony, which is...
New band name.
It could be. Menstrual synchrony. And a lot of it has to do with this study that was done in 1971 by a person named Martha McClintock. And she published in the journal Nature.
What year?
1971.
Ah.
And she studied 135 American college women. And her results were that the beginning of a menstrual cycle was more similar, like the day that you start your period is more similar among women who knew each other than it was among randomly paired women. And the study hypothesizes that women's pheromones had a chance to affect other women when they spent time together. So what's a pheromone? Well, a pheromone, Camden, what is it?
Like a chemical that you can smell or
it
goes out into the world.
It's basically a chemical that animals release that influence the behavior of other animals. So when I think about pheromones, I think about orangutans. And
it's a great
kind
one.
Of magical thing to me that happens when a dominant male who's got those big phalanges, a big dominant male orangutan.
Like little cheek flaps.
Yeah, little cheek flaps. When that orangutan gets older or dies, somehow, and they don't know how, they're doing studies on it. I think I've mentioned this before, but somehow pheromones are released to the other males in the area, and one of them.
Just one.
Yeah, becomes the new dominant male and
wild
develops those big cheek flaps.
We have so much to learn.
We don't know anything except for that women don't sink their periods. So
thanks for grounding us.
People thought that it had to do with pheromones. Your pheromones have a better chance of like latching on to other women if you're like living together. And in fact, people called that the McClintock effect, the idea that periods can sync up. McClintock went on to hypothesize that this syncing was maybe an evolutionary strategy that wouldn't allow one male to have a group of females that he could mate with. So if a group of females were all fertile at once, one male couldn't impregnate them all. But I will be honest, I don't understand that theory because...
That seems reverse
logic. It seems reverse to me. It seems like if all the females are fertile at once, one male could easily impregnate them all. So I don't understand that theory. If you all do, like, please write in don'tpeeonyourleg@gmail.com because I don't...
Trying to understand why the misconception...
I don't understand that theory. I don't understand that theory.
Thank goodness it doesn't work.
People also hypothesize that, you know, this study was published in the 70s. There was a big wave of feminism going on during that time, as there should be.
Nice.
But there was this social idea that, like, women band together and, like, we're all in a sisterhood together. And so the idea that women could, like, band together to defeat male domination was attractive, even as it applies to menstrual cycles. So interesting how sociology kind of has an impact on that. Some people also who believe in the menstrual synchrony theory believe that there's like an alpha or dominant female that everybody else like. So for example, I'm thinking about I had three other roommates in college. So like one of us would be like the dominant female and everybody else's periods would like get in line and everybody would sync together based on like.
I mean, there was a dominant female in your.
Ew. Was it me? No, maybe not.
Move on.
Oh. So that's interesting. Again, not accurate, but interesting. So let's move on now to talk about why it isn't true. So as I've alluded to, there is no evidence that women who live together have their cycles match. The big issue with McClintock's study...
That's what I was just about to ask.
...is that she didn't really consider chance when explaining why people's cycles were matching up.
So in a sense, she didn't consider statistics.
Yes. Yes. So people who have tried to replicate her study more recently believe that there were problems with her methodology and, as you have mentioned, problems with her data analysis. So some issues. There is no known, there's also no known way for that syncing to occur. Like we don't know about any of those pheromones. And as an OBGYN, Dr. Lynn Simpson says, for healthy people living together, proximity doesn't change cycle timing or frequency. A recent study that was done with a period tracking app Clue, there's lots of period tracking apps.
Yeah.
But they did a study based on their user-submitted data and found there was no correlation, no relationship between when a person's period happened and the time spent with others who menstruate. So.
An app that does work. Looking at you, Iowa.
Oh, boy. Oh, gosh. It's too painful. Lots of other studies have not found evidence of periods aligning, like Yang and Shank's 2006 study. They studied 186 Chinese women who lived in the same dorm for over a year. No evidence that their cycles synchronized with their dorm mates. Most of these studies that show that chance is responsible for syncing periods, not pheromone proximity, not evolutionary advantage, anything like that. Mm-hmm. So the way that period cycles work mean that there are some points in the year and in the month when women will be having a period at the same time as other women, but you did not start it at the same time. So it's easy to confuse overlap for syncing up.
Gotcha.
If that makes sense.
Yep.
Yeah. Because you didn't start at the same time. I found a quote that says, over time, a woman who has a 3-week cycle and another woman who has a 5-week cycle will eventually see their periods coincide and then diverge again. So that's throughout the year.
So some of that might just be bias. Like when they do match up, you think, oh, whoa.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Because that was like the rare thing is the thing you notice.
Yes. So it isn't happening. There's no evidence. It's just overlap. Hmm. It's just chance. But why does it persist? Because we hear about this all the time, especially in the media.
The media.
I know. So it is kind of an attractive idea, kind of a cool idea. This idea that you're in some sort of like mysterious harmony with other women and you have a biological sisterhood, but it's
Ooh.
It's nice, but it's not real. It's not
Another
real.
Another band name.
Biological sisterhood?
Yeah.
Huh. And it's the thing of like humans like to have a explanation for phenomena.
Yeah.
You know, we like to think that there's a pattern to everything. It's not fun to be like, oh, it's just chance. So we hear a lot of stories about syncing phenomenon. Like mm-hmm. if you had asked me like 5 years ago, I would have been like, oh yeah, definitely. Like
yeah.
my roommate and I have our periods at the same time. They're probably just overlapping occasionally. But it's largely due to recall bias.
Mm-hmm.
So we remember when they sync up and we forget when they don't. Confirmation bias also has a lot to do with this.
Yep.
So if I believe that I am on the same cycle as my, you know, roommate or whatever, sister, then I will find evidence for that.
Mm-hmm.
Also, this one of the articles made a good point that, like, you don't often go telling people when you started your period. Like, today is the day, everyone. Here we are. Toot, toot. Like,
toot, toot.
So you don't really know whose period aligns with who. So, for example, I work in a department that's mostly women.
Mm-hmm.
We don't, it's not something that we talk about on a regular basis. So
well, that solves another misconception I had.
What's that?
That people just tell each other all the time.
We don't. But so you think about certain people that you spend a lot of time with as maybe you sync up with them, but then you don't think about other people that you spend a lot of time with. So there's no consistency.
Sounds like you have a great icebreaker for your next staff team builder.
I don't think so. Some of the reason for this strongly held belief may also be attributed to the fact that the very real fact that women's medical issues aren't always believed by doctors.
Mm.
And so to some women, dismissing this idea that periods sync up is just another dismissal of their experience, which I completely understand. This is not backed up by evidence, but you don't want it to be one more thing that's like, of course you don't believe me. You never yep. believe anything that I say.
Well, and there are real studies that show that women are often less likely to receive accurate treatment or the same treatment that a man does for the same symptoms.
Absolutely. That is a very real fact. That is a very real fact. It's just not happening in this particular instance. So we've talked about how being, you know, in close proximity with other people who get periods does not impact your cycle. You're not going to sync up with them. I learned that the moon, the ocean's tides.
That was my other one.
Don't influence
Noted.
A person's menstrual cycle. Really How, thought they
what
did.
What if you're like on the moon?
There's, I don't know if we know
limited
that.
Limited
datum. Yeah, we have very few data points for that. But what can affect a period? Do you have any ideas?
The birth control.
Yes. Birth control. In some forms of birth control, you can manipulate when you get your period. Like if you're taking the birth control pill, you can often like skip a week of a period if you want to. IUDs a lot of times lessen your period or diminish it altogether. What else can impact your period?
Oh, like too much coffee.
I don't think so. No.
Like just how you feel that day.
Well, stress.
Oh, stress. Yeah, that stress, is one.
If you are, and I've experienced this, like if you have a really, really stressful, you know, week or so, that can impact your period. Illness and other medications can cause irregular periods, and eating disorders can diminish your period as well.
Yes.
So those are real things that can impact your menstrual cycle.
But not the moon.
But not
your proximity to another person with a period.
To another person who gets a period.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thanks, Margaret.
You're welcome.
There wasn't a fun homophone. What is humongous fungus?
It's rhyming.
Well,
Wait. I got a closer.
Okay, good.
Okay. We're rewinding. So, women or people who get periods who live in close proximity don't sync up with each other's cycles. Period.
Something we are reading, watching, interested in this week, Margaret.
Jojo Rabbit, baby.
Oh, of course.
Oh, my goodness. You gotta see it. I mean both the listener and Camden needs to see it. We did not see it together.
Well, by the time this is released, you will have 2 days to see it before it potentially wins an Oscar.
It should. It deserves everything. Now, have I seen all the other Oscar-nominated movies? No, I have not. But you know what? I don't need to.
Strong take.
Director Taika Waititi, who is from New Zealand and is involved with Fly the Conchords, he is
funny.
A genius. He has found the right mix of humor and sensitivity to tragedy.
Because
this movie is about World War II in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Jojo Rabbit is a boy who is in the Nazi youth, and he has an imaginary friend who happens to be Hitler. And there are some complications along the way.
Sure.
It's about identity. It's about family. It's so good. It's so good. Go see Jojo Rabbit.
Great.
Go see it. Now.
We'll
go.
Wait.
Now. No.
We'll wait.
Go see it.
Welcome back. Hope you enjoyed it. So I saw two movies that when you smush them together and you stare from really far away, you'll know isn't Jojo Rabbit. And it's not even close. But it is cute. I, for the first time along with you, watched Gremlins.
And Gremlins 2.
And Gremlins 2, because everyone told me Gremlins 2 was better.
Was it?
I don't know.
It was
definitely more of Gremlins. I had never seen Gremlins before. I had always got the reference about don't feed it after midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Don't let them get wet. I knew those references. Mm-hmm. Couldn't tell you anything about it.
No.
Christopher Columbus...
Directed the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, he did. He wrote the first one, did not direct it. Sorry.
Directed by Steven Spielberg, or at least
produced by.
Okay. Weird. What a weird time he had thinking through that plot.
Yeah.
I will say, what a great Christmas movie. Had no idea it was a Christmas movie. Margaret and I can't stop saying bright light to each other.
Yeah, because Gremlins don't like bright lights.
So sometimes that's the other piece. Yep.
Like either when one of us is going to bed or when one of us is waking up, we'll go bright light.
Bright light.
Bright light.
Think at night. HBO. Gremlins 2 reference. We are broken, but it was a fun movie. I don't know if I'll watch it again soon, but if you've never seen it, you should definitely watch it. It's definitely entertaining. Gremlins is entertaining. Gremlins 2 is just, did you want to see more Gremlins?
Here you go.
Here you go.
But I will say, if you're deciding between Gremlins and Jojo Rabbit,
well,
they're two very different moods.
I wasn't even trying to give them the option between the
I'm
two.
I'm just saying, very different moods.
Yeah.
Very different moods.
Yeah. Yeah. Nope. Wasn't trying to compare them.
That's fine. That's fair.
Yeah.
Thanks, Camden. Well, thank you, listener, dear reader, so much for listening today. You can hear more content like this from our Sister Wife podcast, my podcast, From U to O, also available wherever podcasts are found.
And Margaret and I, as always, would love to ask you to please give us five. Well, you don't have to give us five stars.
Just we'd really
give
like us it. Stars. We sure would appreciate
a certain number of stars that you feel is appropriate, hopefully close to five, and probably write five. Us a little review. We've started to see more unique listeners pop up from places around the country and the world that we don't know. Which is exciting. And the reviews help people make decisions on, is this a show you want to listen to?
That was quite the
and
sentence.
Clearly I went off script for that whole part. So yeah.
Please rate, review, and subscribe, everybody.
And find it wherever podcasts are found.
Don't Pee on Your Leg and Other Scientific Misconceptions is a podcast produced by Two Birds, One Scone. Articles, blog posts, and more about what you can do every day to conserve our environment can be found at twobirdsonescone.org.
And I am also a big fan of the Two Birds, One Scone Facebook page, where you can often see and hear about the release of this said podcast as well, which has original music by Camillo.
Finally, if you have scientific misconceptions that you'd like explained, or if you want to provide feedback to us, please email us at don'tpeeonyourleg@gmail.com.
Have a great week.
Bright light.
Bright light. Bright light. Bright light.